I'm getting rather tired of hearing people making scathing and sarcastic attacks upon God and the Bible. Tired of listening to them declaiming the shortcomings of Christianity and the imperfections of the church. And I think it's about time that instead of being on the defensive, we did a little attacking on our own account. Instead of always having to offer explanations, we ought as Christians to learn to be aggressive and to stand up for what we believe. We ought to be saying to the critics and the skeptics and the atheists and the unbelievers of all kinds, very well, you don't believe in the God of Christianity, then show us something better than belief in God. You don't believe in the Bible, then produce a better book. You don't believe in Christianity, then show us a better way of life. You criticize Christ, then show us someone more worthy of our faith and confidence. Show us something better. After all, in things like these, a wise man moves with caution. The Dutch have a proverb that says, you don't throw away old shoes until you have new ones to wear. And that makes sense. There are men who come along and try to undermine faith in God and the Bible and Christianity. Their aim is to get people to abandon their faith. But remember, these people want to rob you of the very foundation of your life, but they can offer you nothing better to put in its place. They're the destroyers of this world, not the builders. And everyone knows it's always a lot easier to pull down than to build up. I think that's a lesson that we need to learn early in life, and having learned it, we ought never to forget it. It's always a lot easier to waste money than to earn it. Always easier to take a hammer and in seconds to destroy the beautiful piece of sculpture than to take the hammer and fashion from the rough stone a thing of beauty. Any idiot can walk into an art gallery and slash a masterpiece in a matter of seconds, but he can't produce anything worth looking at himself. I say again, the world is full of skeptics and critics who mock and ridicule, who want to rob you of your faith, but they couldn't lift a little finger to help you if your soul was in need. And for that very reason, I repeat, it's time we turned to these people and we made the issue a practical one. Very well, if I reject what I have, what will you give me in its place? Do you have something better to offer? For example, if I reject the God of the Bible, show me something better. Tell me about your God. Tell me what you would substitute for God. Because don't make any mistake about it, these people do have a God. There are no real atheists, it seems to me, because a man is going to worship something anyway. Whether he believes in the God of the Bible or knows the God of the Bible doesn't matter. Robespierre once said, if there were no God, we should have to invent one. It's just a matter of which God a man is going to worship. He may not claim that his God is all-powerful or all-wise, as we claim for the God of Christianity. But the fact remains that there is invariably something in that man's life which he has elevated to the status of God. There is something or someone that has become his God. His adoration may go to something as worthless as a first-rate star of the entertainment world with fourth-rate morals, or even a dear wife or a fine husband or lovely children. It may be his home and garden, or his job, his business, or even his car. There's always something that takes precedence over everything else in his life and which takes the place of God. As I go to worship my God on Sunday mornings, I very often see my neighbors giving their God a wash down, a God on four wheels. That's their regular Sunday service of worship. I tell you, you're going to worship something. It's all a question of what you will worship. Cicero said centuries ago, there is no race of men so crude and uncivilized that it does not believe in the existence of God. And that is a fact. It is something that the so-called atheist has to try to explain, man's instinct to worship. Or he says, well, these primitive tribes worship gods which you Christians consider fantastic. That may be true, but he still hasn't explained the urge to worship. It may be misguided or misinformed or misdirected worship, but it still testifies to the fact that man wishes to worship something, and the atheist has to explain where that desire came from. Well, he says, I don't worship, I don't believe in God. That may be true, but I will tell you one thing. You are not born an unbeliever. Men are born with a natural inclination to worship, and if a man is an atheist today or claims that he is an atheist, it's because he has been taught to disbelieve in the God of the Bible. And I wish I had more time to quote cases on this. And I still say, even then, there is something in his life which consciously or unconsciously he treats as a God. It's all a question of which God you're going to worship. My God created everything. He is a God who is concerned about me, A God who loves me and wishes me to live in the light and the warmth of his companionship. A God who is able to sustain me when I'm weak, and rebuke me when I need to be rebuked, and to discipline me when I need that too. A God who can comfort me when my heart is broken and I need consolation and sympathy. You don't believe in this God? Then show us something better. Again, the critic says he doesn't believe in the Bible. Then here's the challenge once again. Produce something better than the Bible. Haven't you heard over and over again that the Bible's full of errors and contradictions? And by the way, has anyone ever actually shown you these errors and contradictions? They tell us that the Bible is an imposition on the credulity of people, a fraud, a pack of lies, a fable, a fiction, and so on. Very well, then why don't they produce a better book? After all, there are millions of books in the world today. Solomon said that of the making of books there is no end, and that's true. Every week new publications are brought to our attention by the publishing houses. Well, surely, if the Bible is the bad book that some of its critics claim, somewhere in the vast libraries of the world there must be a better book. Surely at some time or another the printing presses must have spawned a masterpiece immeasurably superior to the Bible. Well, let the critics produce it if they think it exists. Let them prove that there is a book in this world which is better than the Bible, and I, for one, will sincerely and gladly receive it. And if they are afraid that such a book doesn't already exist, let them get together and produce it. Let them consult the great libraries and treasure houses of literature. Let them consult the experts in all the branches of learning, science and philosophy and religion, anything they like. Let them take advantage of all the progress that man has made throughout the centuries. Take all the time they wish, and let them produce a book which will take the place of the Bible. Will they accept this challenge? Have they the nerve to try it? The other day my son came home from school with a book by Bertrand Russell, the philosopher. A book in which he fulminates against religion and everything connected with it. Oh, Mr. Russell was a great critic, but not so hot as a constructor. And I would be prepared to venture that, like other opponents of Christianity and the Bible, men will be reading the Bible when Bertrand Russell's name is remembered only in a reference book, and when the books he has written have been confined to the cellars of the library. Now, why is this so difficult? After all, if the Bible is merely the product of a bygone age, a child of its times, written thousands of years ago in an age of superstition and ignorance, it ought not to be too hard in this modern age for clever men with all their advantages to turn out something that will make the work of these ignorant prophets and shepherds look foolish and cheap. It should be easier for men of such vast learning as the critics think themselves to be to write something to outshine the Bible. That is, if it is nothing more than a scrappy bundle of documents written by ignorant and primitive people. Come on now, isn't this a fair demand? Yet the fact is that this is a challenge which unbelievers of all shades and sizes and shapes have never been prepared to take up. They've spent a lifetime and a fortune criticizing the Bible, writing about the Bible, trying to tear it down, smearing it with downright falsehoods in many instances, but they have never produced anything to equal it, much less surpass it. Whatever has been done by men such as Joseph Smith, the Mormon leader, has turned out to be a cheap imitation of the Bible, full of Bible language and imagery, but lacking entirely the Bible's majesty and power. I say again to anyone listening who opposes the Bible, you don't like it? Then produce something better. And to Christians who are listening, do you know of any book that you would take in exchange for your Bible? Then let me urge you to treasure it more dearly. Use it more frequently, and live more closely to its message. And what about showing us a better religion? Of course, Christianity has never been without its critics, nor is it today. There are organizations in existence which would love nothing better than to see the destruction of Christianity. Very well, what do they offer in exchange that is better? After all, the ultimate test of any philosophy or scheme is what it produces. What kind of men and women does it create? And to those who oppose Christianity, we issue this challenge. You have your own philosophy. Have you got something that makes better men and women? Can you look at your philosophy and then look at the teaching of Jesus Christ and say, we can improve on that? Let me ask you, which religion in the world produces the finest people, develops the finest character, results in the greatest number of good works, and the greatest good works themselves? In which lands do you find the deepest concern for the poor and the needy and the aged? The most schools, the best hospitals, homes for the needy, Do you turn to look at lands where Christianity is rejected? To China, to India, to the Arab countries? Are these the places to which men look in admiration because of their moral and social standards? In which lands do you find the individual enjoying freedom of expression, womanhood respected, childhood protected? Oh, I know that terrible things happen even in our country, but at least you hear about them, and there's a public outcry when they do happen. Show us something better than Christianity if you think there's something wrong with it. And what about the man who says he doesn't believe in any religion at all, the so-called atheist? And incidentally, even he is not without religion when you get down to the truth. Every atheist I have known, and I've known a few, has made a religion of his own unbelief. And he's preached his religion with a lot more fervor than some Christians preach theirs. But that's something else. Let me ask the man who says that he's an atheist, are you made a better man, a more considerate husband and father, a more conscientious member of society? Are you more honest and truthful and pure because you don't follow the teachings of Christ, because you don't believe? There are millions who will stand up today and testify that their lives have been changed for the better because of their faith in Jesus Christ. They are happier people, more contented. They have something for which to live, something to look forward to. Because there's no one to be compared with Jesus Christ, and faith in him meets every need. You see, unbelief can pull down, it can criticize, but it cannot offer any alternative that is equal to, much less superior to, that which it destroys. This evening, I offer you something that unbelief can never offer, a living Savior who really can help you in your problems, strengthen you in time of trial and temptation, comfort you in trouble, guide you along your way, and hold your hand when the time comes for you to leave this life behind. Over 1,300 years ago, in the year 627, a Christian missionary came to the court of Edwin, King of Northumberland. There in the great hall he spoke to the king about Christ and the forgiveness and the salvation and the hope that Christ brings. It was a cold night, and a great fire was burning in the hall. As they talked, a little sparrow flew in through the slit in the wall which served to let in the light, and it warmed itself at the fire before flying out and disappearing into the darkness and the snow again. One of the king's advisers turned to Edwin and said, "Sire, the life of a man seems like that sparrow. He comes out of the darkness and appears for a short time and is gone. But what comes before and what comes after we cannot tell. If this new faith can teach us, let us follow it." Now this is the attitude of a wise man. Unbelief has no solution to anything. So listen to me, particularly if you're not a professing Christian. You may know little or nothing at all of what is contained between the covers of the Bible. And you may think that you care less. But I'm pretty certain that there's going to be a time in your life, if it has not already come, when you will ask the question which Job asked 4,000 years ago, "If a man die, shall he live again?" You may have stood beside the open grave of somebody you love, a father or a mother or a husband or a wife or a child perhaps. And at such a time, feelings stir in your heart that you never knew were there before, and voices cry out in parts of your being that you never suspected were there. Is this the end? Does it all come to this? Shall we never see them again? And every fiber of your being longs for someone to tell you that there's hope. Well, unbelief will never give you that assurance, but Christ can. There is no one like Jesus with his message of forgiveness and hope, and I recommend him to you personally, because I know what he's done for me. Several times people have asked us concerning the chorus that does the singing for us on this program. Well, you might like to know that they're students from Harding College. And we're going to have them singing for us now a very well-known hymn, "Softly and Tenderly, Jesus is Calling."